the morning. Today's daf and Babas is Kufi Dalit. We are in Kufi Gimel on the bottom, Kufi Gimel on Mud Beis. I stopped mid-sentence yesterday. Let's go back. Let's start from the beginning. Sorry. Let's go back. Let's start from the beginning of the sentence yesterday with a Tani Rabba Bar Bechanina Kameh de Rav Nachman. So Rabba Bar Chanina quoted the following Bryce and Rav Nachman. It's Kufi Gimel on Mud Beis. These are short dapim. It's five lines from the top. The Amud Vayaba Yam Han Chilos Banav. So the Pasuk says in Parshas Ki Seitzei regarding Nachla, as I mentioned already a number of times, Nachla is mentioned primarily twice in the Torah. It's mentioned in Parshas Pinchas and it's mentioned in Parshas Ki Seitzei. And yes, there's a smattering of Pesukim at the end of Sefer Bamidbar and Parshas Maaseh regarding Mesibas Haaretz, Mesibas Haaretz, land going from one tribe to another tribe. But in terms of the primary, the principal place in the Torah where to find the halachas of Nachla, so you turn to Parshas Pinchas and you turn to Parshas Ki Seitzei. This is Parshas Ki Seitzei, and the Torah says, "Vayaba yaman chilos banav." On the day in which you do nachla, you give over your estate to the next generation. Vayamata mapil nachlos v'yata nachlos mapil nachlos balayla. So it's done during the daytime, and it's not done during the night. So the Braisa seems like at its very simplest level that you can only. That nachla can only be done during the day. Now, what exactly does that mean by the brisa? Amale Abaye. So Abaye, when he hears the brisa, so Abaye says what? He says, "Ela miata deshchim biyamamahu diyarti lebenei aman deshchim balayla leyarti lebenei." So what does that mean? You die during the day. Okay, so your estate goes to the next generation. If you don't die during the day, you die at night. So the estate does not go to the next generation. Okay. In other words, it's just simply untenable. That can't possibly be what the brisa means. So dilma din nachlas kamar. So the gemara says, "Oh, you know what? And that has nothing to do with when you die and your estate going down to the next generation is a contingency of when you die. That's not the pshat and the brisa. But rather, the pshat and the brisa is that din achala, meaning that it's going to be treated like a judgment. The Ditanya in the Gemara quotes now another brisa of Ahay Salav Neisol L'chukas Mishpat. So the Torah in Parshas Pinchas, when describing the laws of estates, probate law, so the Torah says, the chukas lechukas mishpat. It's going to be treated like a judgment. Ura kola parsha kuliyos din. So it is a function of din, meaning so that this is going to be considered a court action, a system of the court. Uchid Rav Yehuda, and the Gemara now quotes a statement made by Rav Yehuda, which is also going to presume this as well, that when we deal with nachla and a state going from one to another, so really it's without the special chiddushim we're learning right now, one would have thought that's just simply an automatic. Meaning what happens? A person dies and the estate goes to the next generation. That's it. And what does the court have to get involved for? And now what we're learning is that a court has to get involved simply because that's part of the system. Meaning the Torah mandates that this estate, the process of Nachla going from one generation to the next, is a function of the court. Uchid Rav Yehuda Dam Rav Yehuda. The Gemara now quotes a statement by Rav Yehuda, and it goes as follows. So let's say you have three people who are coming in and visiting somebody sick. Now Ratzu Kosin, Ratzu Osin Din. Now if they want to, they could just simply write down what they heard. Or if they want to, they can actually serve as a court, being that there are three of them. Okay, a number of points over here to bring out, and as you can see, there's a lot of Rashbam over here, and it's very critical just in terms of some basic principles, some basic yisodah. So let's take a look at the Rashbam together. It's the second very wide line on the Amud and the Rashbam. So the Rashbam says, I think. In other words, what was the primary purpose of going in into the house? So the Rashbam says, "Bikacholim," meaning that's clear from the Gemara. And that's important, says the Rashbam. Why? Because at this point in time, they're not going in with any type of stated purpose. In other words, right now, they're a blank slate in terms of where they serve on the court. Are they judges? Are they witnesses? Right now, nothing. Nothing. And that's why the statement of the Gemara is Levakar Zacholim. Right now they're just doing the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. Aval. And here the Rashbam says this, and the Rashbam is going to keep repeating this point again and again in today's daf. Here's the first time. Aval inichnasu la'id, shizimnu l'sham, v'yivim l'shmoa, ekidei la'id. But let's say they went in with the express purpose to testify. Meaning that what's going to happen now is that he's going to give instruction. Meaning he's sick, and as we'll speak about in just a moment, he's dying. And so we're talking about a shechiv mirah. We're talking about now somebody who's going to give oral instruction of what is to be done with his assets. So matna shechiver shechiv mirah, gifts given by the shechiv mirah, kemesurim dummy. Okay, the expression was there. It's just I had to knock my head. So once you have a shechiv mirah, give oral declaration, and he does so in front of witnesses, so it's as if it's already done. So the Rashman points out over here that if they went in with the express purpose of testifying what they're going to hear, so that's it. They're locked in. They're locked in as witnesses. And once they're locked in as witnesses, what does that mean? They cannot serve on the bench. They can't be judges anymore. I'm continuing to read it in the Rashman. Hareheim eidim be'ein eid nasadayan. So the Rashbam says, look, it's really no different than when you go in at night. When you go in at night, and which we're going to comment in just a moment in the Gemara, so there, what can you do? You cannot sit on the bench. You can't serve a court at night. So, if you can't serve in a court at night, and you go to visit somebody at night, you only have one particular purpose. You only have one possible purpose from a court perspective, and that is, you can only be a witness. So, dechashuv lo eidim l'kamen. So, later on, the Rashbam points out that that person's an aid. Umitchilu lo hayu ru'uyim l'din, delayla lo avtchilas dinhu. Because you can't judge at night. V'koshken hacha di'im ba'u l'sham, I'm sorry, l'shem eidus ein eid nasadayan. So, once you go in as an aid, that's it, you're locked in as an aide, and then you cannot go over to the other side, and you can't sit on the bench. Which we're going to talk about later this morning as well, and later this morning we'll give a couple reasons of why that should be. Why an aide can't be a dying. But you can't. So, Viraila Dover, and then he goes on and gives proofs to this matter. And I'm going to pause over here in the Rashbam, and I encourage you, take a look more later, more of the Rashbam on this issue. But the Rashbam writes that once you have gone in with the intent of being a witness, you are locked as a witness, and then you cannot go to the other side and serve as a judge. But the case over here is that you went in Levakar Sechola, meaning you went in as a blank slate. You had no particular no particular design as to how you're going to serve in the basin. Are you going to be a judge? Are you going to be a witness? I don't know. And you go in there. And that's why, if you want, you could write down what he said, or if you want, you can actually act as a basin. Because going in neutral allows you now to go to either side. But, again, just to reiterate the point of the Rashbam, it's extraordinarily important. But if you go in as a witness, once you go in as a witness, that's it. You're locked in as a witness, and then you cannot serve as a judge.
But can the Beit Din actually testify itself?
All right.
So why is it if they declared it?
Right. Okay, good. That's a really good question. The Rashbam, later in the Rashbam, he talks about that, the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, about the witnesses, the court who sees a new moon.
Right.
Okay, very good, very good. Okay, that goes deeper into this discussion. So right now, I'll just lay it out simple, and then afterwards, you come to me. I'll show you what the Rashbam says about that. That happens to be a very good point. Okay, so they have two options. In other words, so now you have three people going in to visit somebody. Now they have two options. If they want, they could write down. They could write down. Basically, when we say write down, meaning it's notes for themselves, so that when they testify, they can refer to the notes. Meaning the testimony in the Torah is oral. In other words, there's no written testimony in the Torah. So writing down over here just simply means writing down the notes, so that later point in time they're like, oh, you could use it to refresh their memory. The next Rashbam on the Amud, Ratzu Kosvin Esa Edus Kemoshe Shomim Mipi Achola Heich Manchil Nechasav. Meaning over here, this person is now dying, and he's giving giving declaration in terms of how his assets to be divided. And so, if they want, this group of three can come in and basically write down the notes, so that at a later point in time they'll testify. Or if they want, they can actually serve as the court themselves. And again, the next Rashbam, Dehashloshenehu. And the reason why is very simple, because they're three. V'danim v'omrim kachadish, ploni yito chelek zeh, ploni chelek zeh, shedemem, okay, and basically the Rashbam says that if they're going to be serving as a court, so then they execute exactly what was said by the person who was dying. So now the Rashbam points out, now that's a little bit interesting, because who testified in front of them? So the Rashbam says, Nobody. But that's fine in this particular case. So the Rashbam quotes the line for Rosh Hashanah, which is, look, you have a Beis Din, so they are executing judgment based on what they hear from testimony. You don't think that if they saw the matter themselves, that's even better than hearing something based on testimony? So over here, they saw the matter themselves. They know what his intent was because they told him directly. So the Rashi says, of course, you don't need the witnesses in such a regard. And the Rashi says, and in terms of your edus, you got it. Because this person who's a shchimera, who's dying, so he's making a declaration of about his own assets in front of these judges. We say hodas baldin kameya edim dami, that an admission about what I'm doing with my money is tantamount to 100 witnesses. So you have, at least in theory, 100 witnesses over here telling the Beis Din what's to be done. Well, the tzorach ma yeidu edim ifneim, and there's no need then for witnesses to report. Now, the Rashi points out, and Ben, this does answer your question that you asked me previously, and that's only if at that point in time they can serve as a court. And the Rashbam also points out over here that all this is going to be ratified through a kinyan. I assume the Rashbam over here means a kinyan suda. The sula matzi hadabe. However, if the statement of this sick person has not been ratified and has not been it has not been ratified through a kinyan suder, so then he can at a later point in time retract. You shouldn't serve, Beis Din should not execute any type of judgment on something which is retractable. Makes sense, it's logical, because then the Beis Din is going to look foolish. Okay. So, where do we stand right now? Meaning, a lot of information in just a short number of lines of Gemara. We have Rav Yehuda telling us in the name of Rav that three people going and visiting somebody sick, so if they want, they can write down notes, or if they want, they can actually execute his intent. And again, the basic point of the Rashbam, the main point of the Rashbam is that, well, the Gemara is going to tell us in just a moment that once you're a witness, you can't serve as a judge. Ein eid nasa dayan. Okay, so the Rashbam says that's why the case is very specific over here, where he goes in with no singular purpose, not as a witness, not as a judge. And now when he walks in during the daytime, so now these three can either perform as witnesses, or if they want, they can actually serve as judges. Okay, now, Shnayim, Kosim Venosin Din. The next statement, we're back to the Gemara on the very bottom of Kufi Gimel Beis. What if there are two people? So they can only write, but they can't serve as a court. And that makes sense because Dinam Amos B'Shosha. In other words, in order to have a court, you need three. And obviously, they are not three. They're only two.
Right.
The Gemara, the beginning of Sanhedrin. Right. We'll talk about that later. That's true. But we're speaking here in broader terms, meaning, yes, there's somebody who is a mumcha by himself can judge, but that's not the generality. The generality is you need three. V'amar Rav Chista lo shana ola b'yam. And Rav Chista said that's only when they go in during the day. Ava b'layla, but if they go in at night, afilu shosha kosim v'inos and din, so then even three people, they can only serve as witnesses, they cannot serve as judges. My taima, and why should that be? And this brings us back to the beginning of this entire discussion. To havelu eidim v'ineid nasa dayan, because at night they can't be judges. And remember, nachla requires mishpat. It requires a judgment. It requires a basin. But when they go in at night, they can't do that because you can't start a basin at night. So when they're going in at night, what are they going in for? From a judicial standpoint, they're only coming with one purpose, and that's testimony. Not serving as a judge. Vein aid nasa dayan, and you can't jump from being an aid to being a dayan. So Amar Leh, now just finishing up the Gemara, to which he says, you know what? That's exactly what I meant. In hachinami kamina. That's exactly what I meant. Meaning going back to the beginning of the entire sugya, when he quoted the pasuk, Yom only the day, not a night, it means that the nachala is a form of judgment. It requires a system of a court, and therefore you need judges. And so when people are going in there, and with the three people, if they want to, they can only serve as, they could serve as judges, but that's only if they go in during the day, not if they go in at night.
The court has to be formed right there and then, meaning if three individuals made one and one with the during the day they gathered afterwards. Uh-huh. They formed at that time, or is it has to be formed
The way the Rashman presents it, it sounds like a unit. It sounds like they have to come in as a unit. And again, just let's spend a little bit more time together with the Rashman, because again, the Rashman is now going to just speak to these very basic ideas about the servicing as a witness as opposed to a judge. And the Rashman writes, we're in the very top of Kuf Yudal Amad Aleph, the first Rashman on the top of the Amad. L'machra afilo kasu ela im ken yavo acherim v'yidu b'fneim k'dam b'rosh Hashan ra'u shlosha v'hein Basin Yoshiva mechavrehem etzal ayachid echad mehashlosha v'yaidu ashtayim b'fneim v'yomer ashlosha mekudash parchin and hasam. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah describes the beginning of the third paragraph over there in Rosh Hashanah, describes where you have three people who see the moon, and what's going to happen is that one will excuse himself from testimony, from testifying. He'll be a member of the court, and the two will now testify in front of the three. So the Gemara there asked the question, well, I understand the three people see the new moon, so what do you need one person to jump sides to go from being a witness to being a judge, and the remaining two are going to be witnesses? What is that? In other words, just have all three of them serve as judges. Umokmin and Kishiru Balaila. The Gemara there in Rosh Hashanah says, you know what happened? The three of them saw at night. Hilkach heinatzmam einichol mekadesh lamachar. Sharei balaila edim hayu velo dayanim. So the Rashbam, again, this is consistent with what the Rashbam said earlier this morning, and it's an extraordinarily important point. Meaning, at the time of viewing, if you can only serve as one role, that's it. Now you're locked into that one role. Now you're a witness. At nighttime, you can't be a judge. So the only thing you can be from a judicial standpoint as a witness. That's the case in Rosh Hashanah, where even though three people saw it, even though three people saw the new moon, but it's nighttime. Now they are locked in as witnesses. Ulamachar, that's a good question. Ulamachar, just give me a moment. Ulamachar ein eda roe bedavar nasa dayan al pi edus atzmo. Elim ken yayid acher befanav. Dehashta ein oseh hadin al pi edus atzmo. Vehilchach echa min eshlosh shesharo chodesh kishemoshiv mishnayim atzlo liyos Now, Yaakov asks, I don't understand, says the Rashbam. So how can that one person who saw the new moon at night, how can he now take a new role? Meaning, how can he go from being a witness to being a judge? So the Rashbam presents that, and he says, Sharei api edus achir shemeidim lefanav hu dan etzadin v'lo api ri'is atzmo. Because even though he himself saw the moon at night, but when he sits on the court, he is ruling that he saw the new, that, I'm sorry, he is ruling about the new moon, not based on his own viewing of the new moon, but rather based on the testimony of the two. Meaning, it's true, he also saw the new moon. So when he moves role from being a witness to being a judge, he's not judging based on what he saw, but based on what he's here, what he heard. Now, I know that's strange, by the way, because he himself saw the event as well. But just again, from a system standpoint, right, you can't judge. If you saw as a witness, you cannot judge based on that which you saw as a witness. If at the time when you saw the witness, you couldn't serve as a judge. Meaning, and the Rashbam says, and here's what we're not going to do. We're not going to disqualify somebody from being a judge just because he saw the event. Meaning, as we know, the third parak in Sanhedrin talks extensively of what disqualifies a judge. Gambling, more versions of gambling, stealing, lending with interest, etc., etc. Right? Go through the third parak of Sanhedrin. But viewing the event is not going to disqualify you as a judge. The only thing you can't do, and I know it's really difficult, meaning conceptually I understand understand this beautifully. But practically, it's very difficult. But here's what you can't do. Once you're sitting on the bench now, you can't judge based on that which you saw. But rather, the only way you could judge is based on the testimony of others. Specifically in a case where you saw at a time where you couldn't be a judge. But if the three of you saw during the day, so here now, you don't need the witnesses because we're a court. And we can now execute judgment based on that which we saw, and we don't have to worry about, hey, we were witnesses, therefore we can't be judges. No, because we can be judges right now. Okay, pause here in the Rashman. Okay, so we got the basic idea of what he lays down. So it's a lot to process, it's a lot to digest, but this idea that once you are a witness, you yourself cannot take on the role of a judge. However, it doesn't disqualify you from being a judge, meaning that what you can do is you can move to the court, and you can move as a member of three of the court, but then your judgment has to be based on two other objective witnesses. Yes?
Going from witness to judge, I can see you could have a conflict of interest when you talk about humans. It's not an inanimate object of the moon.
Testifying about the moon may be in other areas of halacha fundamentally different. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah over there, at least according to one opinion, says that that relatives can testify about the new moon. According to one opinion, you're right. Meaning, it may not be a good case study to discuss the broader laws of courts and judges, etc., etc. But in terms of this basic idea of taking on the role of a witness, then moving to the taking on the role of a judge, in that regard, the Rashbam certainly sees this as a central theme idea that applies to both testifying about the moon and testifying about monetary law. Okay, let's move on to the next Rashbam. I know I'm very Rashbam heavy today, but these are just some very basic ideas we're discussing today. Ein Eid Nasa Dayan. When you're a witness, you can't be a judge. And why not? The Rashbam writes in the next Rashbam. Hamed al davar einase o dayin ba oso davar. When you're testifying about something, you can't be a judge on that matter. Vigam imrasa davar v'nase eid einase ala o dayin. Or let's say you see something, and again, going back to the point that he has said again and again, you see something and your design, your intent is to be a witness, at that point in time, you can no longer serve on the bench. Based on that which you saw, be'edus atzmo, elaim kein ma'edim achrim b'fanav, v'nir be'enai. So the Rashbam says, now you want me to explain this to you? Because the Gemara says this again and again throughout Shas, ein eid nasa dayan, that a witness cannot be a judge, and the Gemara doesn't give an explanation. Why should that be? Why can't a witness be a judge? So the Rashbam over here proposes his explanation, and he writes, nir be'enai digzeres hakasavu. So I think it's gzeres hakasav, meaning not going to provide a rationale, not going to provide a reason, but the Torah dictates that this is in fact just simply the case. Dichsiv ve'amdu shnei hanashim be'edim hakasav medaber lifnei Hashem. So the Torah says ve'amdu shnei hanashim. So that's a reference to obviously the witnesses, and then the pasuk says lifnei Hashem. So hainu lifnei adayanim, that's in front of the judges. Ashmi'inan kra ditzarech laha ichnayim lifnei hadayanim. And so that means that what the Torah is telling us is that if you take on the role of witnesses, you now must testify in front of judges. But what you can't do is then, you can't be a witness and then basically say, okay, I saw it, I know what happened, now I'm going to move to the bench, and now I'm going to execute judgment based on that which I saw. You can't do that because the Torah says, basically, everyone's got a role. Once you have the role of a witness, you have to testify in front of a judge. So the Rashbam's explanation is basically, if I can try to summarize, it's basically the roles. Everyone's got a particular role, and you cannot exchange roles. And again, why? So the Rashbam says, gzeres hakasav. It's a decree. Another suggestion on the daf is Tosos right over here. Second Tosos on the Amud. The first one is very long. The second one is all the way towards the bottom. Ve'in Eid Nasa Dayan. Hainu Eid HaMaiki Deprisha V'Dafka B'Daraisa V'Darabanan Nasa Yadayan Kedemucha Perakam Adigin Perakam Adiksuvos V'Rabbi Kivadam Rabachova Kulan Eid Nen Afilo Eid Roa Eid Nasa Dayan Hainu Dafka B'Nin Nefashos. Okay. Where, I'm sorry. I want the Svara. I thought it was here. Okay. No, it's not here. Okay. All right. I'll come back if I can find it later point in time. Fine. Otherwise, we'll come back. I thought Tosis gave the Svara of EF Shalah Hazima. Okay. Let's go back to the Gemara. All right, Itmar. Say so. Quick recap of what we've seen so far today. This idea that Nachla requires a judgment, and in the event of a judgment necessary, so you can have three people coming in and serving as a judge. Okay, and if they don't want to, if they want to serve as witnesses, so by all means they can serve as witnesses. But once they do that, so then they're excluded from judging. And again, just to reiterate, according to the Rashbam, it means that they're excluded from judging based on that which they saw. Meaning they could certainly serve on the bench and judge based on others testifying in front of them, but they cannot judge based on that which they saw themselves. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the first discussion of today. Itmar, we're on Kuf Yudal Amud Aleph. The Gemara quotes, Kinyan Ad Emasai Choser. So, if you're making a Kinyan over here presumably means a Kinyan Sudar. Meaning, so you have a scenario in which somebody is giving executive orders of what to do with his estate. And here, interestingly enough, the Rashbam writes that, the kinyan ad emetzei yachalazor v'chein kasa beperisha rabbeinu chananel ubein ban asbari ubein man ashchemera b'miksas tisbei kinyan mairi. So we're talking about somebody who's healthy. We're talking about someone who's mildly sick, and what the Gemara wants to know is v'kabayad emetzei yachalachzabo mikinyano ulevat lo duhulo gamer maknem biyad ela ledasa kaim lo tanaim shiyafarish. Meaning, it's a very interesting discussion. When we are talking about Kinyan Sudar, so basically there's an implicit understanding, writes the Rashbam, that even though we did a Kinyan Sudar, and it's going to be ratified, it is not going to be immediately. Meaning, it's basically, I'm giving a modern analogy, but it's like a handshake. But even with a handshake, like there's an allowance of time for basically you and I to process that which we're talking about right now, and within a certain allowable time, if I want to, I can retract. And that's what the Gemara is saying. Now, it's interesting. In other forms of kinyanim, meaning by hagbah, by meshicha, by mesira. So we don't talk in these terms. Meaning we don't talk in terms of an allowable time to retract the offer. But in kinyan sudar, however, which in of itself is not as pronounced a kinyan as meshicha, where I pull the item. That's a very pronounced kinyan. I'm actually physically taking the item towards me. Over here, we're talking about Kinyan Sudar, right? We're waving a handkerchief. It is a Kinyan, but it's not as pronounced, and therefore, a certain amount of time for allowing a retraction. How much time are we talking about? So the Gemara debates. Rab Amar Kozman Shioshvin. So Rabbi says, as long as we're sitting and negotiating. And Rav Yosef Amar Kozman Shasukim Baosa Inyan. And Rav Yosef says, as long as we're talking about this particular topic. Once the topic has been changed, once we start talking about the weather, so then that's it. The matter has been ratified. Okay, so by Kinyan Sudar, there is an allowable time of escape from that which we are discussing, or not more than discussing, actually creating an acquisition over, and a machlokas amarim, how much time we're talking about. So So I'm Rav Yosef Kavasi Didi Mistaber. So Rav Yosef says, look, I think, while we're still on topic, you have a chance to retract. After we change topics, then we can't retract. The Amr of Yehuda, let's go back to what we learned just a moment ago. We talked about three people who were going in to somebody who was dying. And we said that if they want, they could write. If they want, they can actually be service judges. Now remember, the Rashbam told us this before, but now the Gemara is saying it's point blank. Meaning, imagine that right now he said, this is going to go to him, this is going to go to him, this is going to go to him. And now the three of them can actually serve as judges. And they're going to judge based on what they heard themselves. And then he says, you know what, I changed my mind. What? Now, basically, you have the court looking extraordinarily foolish. The only time the court is going to make a judgment is only when it is something that is unretractable. So, Rav Yosef is saying, of course I have to be right. Meaning that we're talking about that until the point in time where this topic has now come to a conclusion, and we moved on to another topic. So at that point in time, it's unretractable. And it has to be. Because just earlier this morning, we talked about how Beis Din can now execute judgment based on that which they heard. So clearly, we're beyond the point of no return. But you see, according to you, Rabbah, as long as we're still sitting, they can retract. Well, if we're still sitting and they can retract, so then the court's going to rule, and then he's going to say, you know what, I changed my mind, and you're going to have the court looking foolish, and you can't have that. So I'm Rav Ashi, I'm Ritzel Shemaisa Kamed Rav Kahana. So Rav Ashi says, look, I spoke about this man in front of Rav Kahana, Ula Rav Yosef, Ula Rav Yosef, Minicha, Velechush Dama Hadabay. So the Gemara says, well, you know, according to Rav Yosef, it doesn't work out so well, because look, according to Rav Yosef, there still is an allowable time of retraction, meaning granted it's not until we change topics. So what is Rav Yosef going to say? Rav Yosef is going to say, oh, well, they must have changed topics. So it must be that according to Rav Yosef, we changed topics. So hachanami de kama v'hada yasivu. And the Gemara says, so I'll just simply say the same thing for Rabbah, which is that according to Rabbah, when do we hit the point in our return? When we stood up and we sat back down again. So I'll just simply tell you that the case of the three going into a Shchiv Mirah's house is where he gave the instruction, he gave the oral declaration of what's going to happen. They all stood up and they all sat down again. So it's not. In other words, according to both Rabbah and Rav Yosef, there is a point of no return. And in terms of explaining the case, we'll just simply say that either we changed subjects or we stood up and we sat down again. In other words, we just simply hit the point of no return.
As an option, always to change his mind. Yeah.
No, in other words, once he's a Shchiv Mirah and he's making a declaration, so that's it. There is a discussion of, not discussion, it's not retractable. And as the Rashman points out, as the Gemara points out, as it was ratified with the King of Sudar, there is a discussion of where a Shchiv Mirah gives away all of his estate before he's dying, and then he recovers. Then there's an implicit understanding that he only gave it all away because he thought he was going to die. Okay, but we are talking about that. We're not discussing that scenario. We're discussing where he's just simply allocating some or most of his assets. Okay. And the Gemara says that the halacha follows like Rav Yosef in this regard. Meaning, that's number two. There are three halachas which he says the halacha follows like Rav Yosef. One is sada, two is inyan, and three is mechsa. So I'll explain one and three in just a moment. But in terms of number two is what we're discussing, inyan. Meaning, we did a kinyan sudar. We have ratified the deal. There still is a point of retraction. And when have we hit the point? There still is time for retraction. And when have we hit the point of no return? When you move on to a new subject. When you decide that now is a good time to talk about the weather, and now you have a wonderful conversation about the weather, so then you've hit the point of no return. Okay, quickly, just to go over the other two halachas in which the Gemara says the halacha falls like Rav Yosef. So one is Sada. The one being Sada, it's interesting halacha. We discussed this in the very beginning of the Masechta. This takes us well back. This is Daf Yud Beis in Baba Basra. Right, that's over 100 days ago. The Daf Yud Beis, we discussed the scenario in which father died, the estate is now going to be divided amongst the brothers, and for one of the brothers, one of the parcels of land to him is really, really lucrative. Why? Because it happens to abut another one of his own properties. And so he says, look, what's it to you guys? Meaning, I'll just take this property in any way. Look, we're dividing the properties fairly, meaning everyone's getting the same amount of land, and this property happens to be, to me, a really big deal because it abuts. It's contiguous to one of my properties. So can he make such an argument? So if you remember, this takes us way back to Daf Yud Beis. It was Machlokas Amoraim, whether or not he can make such an argument. Interestingly enough, Rav Yosef says, no, he can't make that argument. And Rav Yosef says that argument in of itself is not going to allow him to take the land that is contiguous to his own land. Okay, and that was the issue of Sada and the issue of Mechsa, which is not something we saw yet in Baba Basra. We'll be seeing later on Kuf Mem Gimel. I cheat. I look at the Rashbam. So Daf Kuf Mem Gimel. So the Gemara over there tells us that a person gives away his estate. He's dying. He's giving away his estate to his wife and his children. So, now what does that mean? Is she now an equal partner in the estate, or is she a 50% shareholder now in the estate? It's a machlokas later on, and the Gemara says, halachas like Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef says that she is a 50% shareholder in the estate, and not equal partner to however many of the children there are. Okay, so in these three halachas, halacha falls like Rav Yosef, but it's brought up over here because obviously of one of them is going to be our issue of moving from one inyan to another inyan. Okay, let's do one more discussion for today. Ha'isha es bina. Okay, the last discussion we're going to be covering today is that a Yerusha can go from mom to her son. So ha'sulam ali ha'tan alei reisha ha'isha simo. So the Gemara says, well, the Gemara says, I don't understand. A man inherits his mother. Va'isha sishto. So we already know that in terms of Yerusha, from the mother to the son, so it is a one-way street. It's not a two-way street. So the Gemara says, right? In other words, go all the way back to Kuf Ches. Let me do this a little bit better. Let me explain this a little bit better. You go back all the way to Kuf Ches. The Gemara told us back then that basically the way to divide our Mishnah is into four categories. There are nachlas that can go in both directions, like father-son. Right? Father predeceases the son, so then all the estate's going to go from father to son. Son predeceases father with no children of his own. The estate is going to go to his father. So that's a two-way street. Then the Mishnah says, Ela Nochlin. Sorry. So a man to his mother, and a man to his wife, and a man to his and the nephews to their uncle, so they're going to receive, but they are not going to be able to bequeath. And then the Mishnah says ha'ishas bina, that when it comes to a mother and her son, ve'ishas bala v'achia manchilim v'lo nochlin, they bequeath but they don't receive. Really, once you know the second category, of course you know the third category, and the Gemara points that out right now. Meaning, the Mishnah already told us in category number two that the son inherits his mother, but he doesn't bequeath to his mother. And then category number three, the Mishnah says, and oh, by the way, the son doesn't bequeath to his mother. Like, in other words, we got that. So, ha'sulam ali, that's the Gemara's question. Ha'tan le reisha, ha'isha simo, va'isha sishto. So the Gemara says, ha'kamash malan, di'isha es bena, dumi di'isha es bala. So the Gemara says that what the Mishnah is treating us to is the following comparison. That a woman to her son is going to be very similar to a woman to her husband. And that is the following. Ma'isha es bala in a bal yarish es isha bekever. When it comes to a woman and her husband, so, as we discussed yesterday and the day before, we know that a husband will inherit the estate of his wife. But we also just learned yesterday in the daf, and we are repeating it today, that what the husband is going to be inheriting are only holdings that are currently held by his wife at the time of death. If there, however, are futures, roi, like account receivables, like a future Yerusha that would have come to her had one of her, let's say her parents were still alive. So had her parents died, she would have had that Yerusha, but they haven't died yet. So that is something that's not going to be inherited by the by the husband. And the Gemara says, Af Isha Espina, and the same thing is regarding a woman and her son. Ein Haben Yorish Es Imo Bekever Lahan Chalachin Mena'av. A man is not going to inherit his mother, meaning a man will inherit his mother, but only current holdings. But what he will not inherit are future estate that would have gone to Man had Man been alive. So that he's not going to get in order to divide amongst his brothers. Okay, so that's why the Mishnah makes the comparison, and that's what we gain from having case number two and case number three. One more time today for the Rashbam. The Rashbam over here, Afa Isha Es Bina. The Rashbam is about eight lines down after the lines start getting wide again. Ein manchelas lo beray lo la'achem isasok kedei she'anchul hu l'kravav shemitzad aviv v'lo mitzad imo. Kigon. So the Rashbam over here gives an example. She'emesa ben v'achakach mesa imo. Let's say the son dies and afterwards mom dies. Ein zeh ben shu kvar mes v'nasum bekever mikudam misas imo yoresh ad. So we're not going to say at this point in time that the son is going to inherit his mom and his mom's estate if the son predeceased his mom. And if we were to say that, of course, then that means that the estate will go to his brothers, his paternal brothers. Ella, Yorshi Avia, Yorshin Oso, Yorshin Oso. Whoever is... In other words, remember, it was his mother who died. So who's going to be the chief inheritor of his mother? It's going to be the father. And the father or whoever comes via the father. And then the Rashbam writes, and why should it be? Meaning, why isn't it the case that the son is going to inherit his mother even post-mortem? Usvarahu. So the Rashbam says, if you think about it, it actually is very rational. Why? Because once the son dies, so that's it. His ability to inherit is totally dissolved. Okay, I'm sorry I read that too quickly, but basically the idea is that the son, if in the event that he predeceases a mother, or if, let's say, mom dies and there are future holdings that will come to the mother, in both of those cases, the son doesn't get it. Okay, pause over there on the Rashbam.
Is it
the son
from another husband?
A son from another, right, in other words, right. Correct. Okay, fine. Let's stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up from the next section. Just a quick recap of today. Okay, today our big topic of discussion today was Nachla coming through a Beis Din. Beis Din is going to be involved in the allocation of an estate to go from one generation to the next generation. You need a court. And the court's necessity is not, generally speaking, in terms of how much is to be divided, because it's pretty straightforward. But in the event that he's giving instruction before he dies, so then you're going to have the either witnesses testify that which he said, or you can actually have a court there present listening to what he says and then executing based on what he said. But as we learned earlier this morning, that's only when they come in, meaning these three people coming in with a blank slate. So only when they're coming in as a tabula rasa, then and only then can they either be judges or they can be witnesses. However, if they go in with the express purpose of being witnesses, that's it. They're locked in as witnesses and they can't be judges. But even when, as we say that, again, just as a point of clarification, which the Rashbam repeated again and again throughout today's daf, that only means that they can't serve as judges based on what they themselves saw. But they certainly can serve as judges and allow a judgment to occur based on the testimony of other people. And as we learned earlier this morning, that also means that if the three of them go in at night, which at night they can't serve as judges, so that only gives them one express purpose from a court standpoint, and that is witnesses. And now they are locked in as witnesses, and then that means that they cannot serve as judges. And again, just to reiterate, that only means that they can't serve as judges based on that what they saw. They can serve as judges based on the testimony of others. Okay, and the principle of Ein Eid Nasa Dayan, and the Rashbam describes as Exeris Akosov, and I thought I had a Tosus, but But I'll find it. And now I have good homework to do for today. The Tosfos talks about the Eidoshiyachulazima, but I'm gonna find that Tosfos. And then we moved on to our second big topic of today, and that is that when you do Kinyasudar, there is a lengthier allowable time of retraction in the case of a Kinyasudar. The way I explained it, the Rashbam doesn't say it so clear cut the way I'm saying it, but the way I'm saying it is because a Kinyasudar is a looser form of Kinyan. It is an allowance for a lengthier time of retraction. How much time do you have to retract from a Kinyasudar? Machlokas Amarim, the halacha is like Rav Yosef, in which as long as we're talking about this topic, once the topic has come to a conclusion, so that's it, the meeting adjourned, and no longer is it retractable. And then the last thing we talked to this morning was the inheritance of a son from his mother's estate. A son is only going to get from his mother's estate current holdings, no future holdings. And the Rashbam gives a svar for that, a rational explanation of why that should be. But that's why the Mishnah puts it right alongside Yerushas HaBaal. Just like Yerushas HaBaal, the husband's estate, the husband's inheritance from his wife is only with current holdings, so too the son from his mother is only going to be receiving current holdings.